Before I continue, yes, my hope was attempt to initiate you at least a bit in the ancient Indian culture. Of course, it cannot be done in a couple of months. You understand that? Yes. So don't be too optimistic about that. Still, some acquaintance, you know, some preliminary acquaintance would be invaluable. But now, I would like to tell you before I continue with the conception of Atman Brahman. You remember we ended with that conception, yes, yes. When I told you about Atman in me, in gods, in animals, yes, and how the very idea of Atman destroys the natural hierarchy. Social hierarchy, economic hierarchy, intellectual hierarchy, yes. That is why I regard that conception of Atman Brahman, which probably was created somewhere around 7th, 6th century BC. I regard this conception as expressed in the Upanishads as a revolutionary. Revolutionary not in a vulgar sense, yes. You understand? Because in a vulgar sense, revolutionary is, well, the problem of power, of destruction, of being killed. But the real revolution is the revolution in things. And that is what was done around this time in ancient India, and according to a remarkable German philosopher Karl Jaspers, not only in ancient India, but at the same time in ancient China, with the appearance of Taoism, and in quite a few other places of the ancient world. So, first point today. The idea and thing, you understand there are two different things, yes, of text in ancient Indian and our time. In ancient Indian, we are meeting with a very interesting phenomenon of the appearance of commentary. One of the most interesting phenomena in ancient Indian culture, which continued practically until, let me tell you, well, the theory and conception of Atman Brahman in the Upanishads appeared somewhere probably between the 7th and the 6th century BC. Then that idea was commented upon in circle Brahma Sutra, somewhere around the 2nd century BC, yes. Then the great Indian philosopher Shankara commented upon that idea and upon previous commentation. Then his successor, he commented around the 9th century AD, yes, follow me. Then, in the 19th century, AD, yes, our time almost. His successors commented upon his commentary, and just recently, 12 years ago, a newest commentary appeared on the commentary, on the commentary, on the commentary of Shankara. That is, commentary and the work of commentation very early became the way of existence of a text. Do you understand that? This is very interesting. I'm desperately trying whether it would be possible to have something like that in the modernity, in European and American culture. Undoubtedly, the work of commentation, it exists in our culture too, but because now in our culture it is purely It is a kind of purely scholarly work, but very often reduced to a kind of word. Scholarly interpretation. And very often what we are commenting upon, after having read the text, it is its ideas, yes, of the text. So the only object of commentation was text itself. It was text itself. Then I understood very well when I, the first time in my life, I had a very lengthy discussion in the University of Oxford. But you know, there is such a university. Don't exaggerate, it is highly exaggerated. I had a lengthy discussion with young Marxists. And they were discussing the Marxist ideas today. And in one aspect, I realized that none of them had read a single text, genuine text written by Marx. Yes. So they were Marxists in double quotes, because they knew Marxism, but they never attentively read a single genuine text of Marx. You understand the difference? So it was public and chatting, or as I say, table talk of typical Marxists. I'm talking the same with American Marxists. And it is a neglect of text. And it is the text which was more important than all ideas. We have to start with the text for our commentation. Do you understand that reason? Yes. It's a very important point in our culture too. And that is why one science still exists. By the way, I cannot say I like it too much, but still it is necessary. The science of philology, never despise philology. It is due to philology that we still are able to read and to talk about the marvelous depths of our literary tradition. So, back to the concept of Atman. The concept of Atman is very too prone. Well, it is very, on the one hand, it seems to be very simple. There is something called, what's the first term? That. That, which is your which is your I in double quotes, and which is unchanging, unchangeable, eternal, and which, to which no, it is such an entity to which no action or activity can be ascribed. It does not behave, it does not act, it does not speak, it does not think. It only what? Remind me? Knows, that's it. Knowledge is. It's only. Now it seems to be very, very clear. At that time it was a very powerful idea. Powerful not only philosophically, but also in a way socially, culturally and economically. Because, as I told you the day before yesterday, you remember, it is the same Atman in, yes, highly developed and intellectual me, yes, ridiculous, isn't it? In Einstein, in God, in a fox, yes, in a child, in a lizard, in each and every sentient being, in Sanskrit, sattva, I ask you, remember, S-A-T-T-V-A, and if that being is one and the same, what is absolutely necessary to remember, it's the sameness. It is the same in you, in me, in Einstein, in God Indra, in God Varuna, yes, and Ina Bokstoppels with your famous permission, which means that in a respect of Atman, we are all utterly uninvolved. When I say we, I mean that strange variety of sentient beings which is called man. Humans. But in what way, speaking of ourselves, we are radically unequal. That's the word. According to the conscience, we are unequal. Of and with respect to our knowledge. Knowledge with capital K. And you may ask, why is that so? Or as my young English friends used to say, that seems there. I hate that word. It is unfair. Why one knows more and the other knows less? What is the first factor? That is, on what in the first place? I want to know your opinion, ladies and gentlemen. The fact of the absence of fact of knowledge depends on what, first of all?
Personal effort to seek the knowledge.
Personal what?
Effort.
Effort. Effort with capital E. Effort. And our modern culture is a culture of effortlessness. Or take it easy, make it easier, do relax, and other idiotic recommendations. And the sages of the Upanishads, the great wise ones, they repeat it all the time. Don't take it easy because it is not easy. Yes? Because only what is difficult is interesting. Do you understand that? Yes? And no relaxation. Under that tree and continue to study. Yes. No relaxation. For how long? Let me tell you. The first period of study in the forest for ascetics, but they were ascetics of a special kind. They were not the great ascetics of the Upanishads, like Janaka say, of whom I was telling you, or Yajnavalkya, or others. They were not complete ascetics. Some of them, they were warriors. Some of them, they were merchants. Some of them were farmers, blacksmiths. But ask me immediately, what then became of their asceticism? Of their renunciation. How could it be, says, very simple. Because according to the conception of the Upanishads, a real asceticism does not consist in what, no, I do nothing, yes. I do not eat, yes. I do not speak. I do not trade. I do not dance, yes. I do not... I do not farm, etc., etc. The real asceticism is that while being anything, while being a warrior, while being a king, while being a merchant, a farmer, you are thinking upon the truths of the Upanishads. You understand that truth? Yes? Upanishad. Upanishad. Well, Upanishad, the name of the text which appeared after the Vedas and the Brahmanas. Well, probably it would be better, Upanishada. Upanishada, which literally means is told, because the text at that time was oral. They started writing the sacred text only somewhere in the 2nd or the 1st century BC. Yes. Never lose out of sight that tradition continued to be on the oral. Yes, by word of mouth and through ear of the people. And so they started commenting and commentation on one or another text was very often, remember it, simultaneous, synchronic with the oral creation of the text. So the writer, then imagine, was a forest with a teacher and pupils around him, and he reads the text which he creates. Yes, and they repeat it. Oh, that he says. Oh, no, it is not exactly that what I said. Yes, it is not exactly that. Remember the significance of the term that. That is that as a synonym in Sanskrit for Riyam. Yes. For the only reason some commentation says. No. Cannot cognize, cannot know what Atman is, what is that, what is that I? Because literally, as I told you, Atman means not even I, but rather me, myself. Well, usually it is rendered into English as self, but why not? Anyway, but one cannot cognize what is Atman without cognizing first, well, what is not Atman. We have already slightly touched upon it. So, when I think about Atman, yes, when I think about Atman, it does not mean that I will acquire. You know better than I, ladies and gentlemen, that you can, well, you may think and think and think and think and what? No. No result. And at the same time, knowledge may appear, well, spontaneous. Without a moment of thinking, it happens, yes. That is why I want to delineate, to make a demarcation between knowledge and thinking. In ancient Indian philosophy, in ancient, I think it is your business, yes. Try. Do think. But I think, which is with respect to thinking and special thinking. It may appear, it may disappear. It is
knowledge.
But that's it. But first of all, what must appear then what? Or in the Upanishads, the first factor was not even effort, but what? Wish, desire. The first factor in knowledge. You cannot know without, first of all, wishing to know. And wishing to know more than wishing anything else. In fact, it is a repetition of that which had begun in the Vedas. Because, do you remember that, speaking of the ritual, yes, I told you that the ritual was regarded, any ritual, any sacrifice to God Indra, to God Varuna, to God Agni, yes, any sacrifice was regarded as valid, yes, only if one not only physically performs it, but wants to perform, yes. Probably it was the first culture in the world where it was stressed that any action without want, without wish, without desire, underline is not a real action. Very interesting. interesting, ladies and gentlemen, from that it applies first of all to, first of all, it applies to knowledge. Till knowledge only starts, or shall we say, may arise. Again, ladies and gentlemen, let me stress may, which means what? Not that. You understand the semantic difference? Because may and can may. May, in the sense of, oh, it may happen so that it. No more than that. Full stop. No guarantees. But without your wish to know, it cannot arise. There's only one negative guarantee. And it is very interesting. I will give you another little illustration, which was given in the Brahmanas. It was about the ritual of marriage, yes. That ritual was regarded as very important. But let me return, because I'm afraid that it was not said by me in a definite form about ritual, you know? About the ritual. So, when the ritual, I'm quoting now from a Brahmana, when a ritual of marriage is a real ritual. Yes. The first condition. It's not something, well, I want to marry a girl, yes? Then I ask a Brahman to perform the ritual of marriage. And, of course, I have to, what, to pay the Brahman. Well, it is all no monkey business. It is a work, yes. There were rituals which continued for 16 to 26 hours. And they were very short rituals, 2-3 minutes. But still, it is a work, and great work. So, but now, I want to marry. In order even to start the proceeding, connected with marriage, I have to what? To wish to marry. And the first question which the Brahman asks me before even taking money from me, what, do you really wish to marry them? And if I say, and you know, on the one hand, reverend sir, it is not at all a bad idea. Yes, and you can go away, you. Wait, give you really wish. Yes. But the second, that Brahmana is, everything is okay, cannot perform the fully fledged ritual without wishing it himself. So you see, it is not simply my wish. It must be wish of the priest to perform the ritual on my behalf. Yes. So wish and wish and wish and wish. And then, we read in the Upanishads. One may know, may, one can start knowing the Atman Brahman, only provided that he or she really, really wishes to know, which means that all other wishes are temporary, and then eternally, forever, set apart in this aside. Doesn't that sound so? So the core of the knowledge is wish and effort. And that is why those young girls and boys were sitting in the forests studying the knowledge of Atman Brahman for years and years and years. Let us pass to the second aspect of knowledge. So the first, that factor, wish, effort, without which nothing is valid. But there is a second, very significant. It is totally different from ours. purely philosophical things related to knowledge. You know, in European tradition, we have an especial branch of philosophy devoted to knowledge, to the study of knowledge, but that branch is called what? Epistemology. Ever heard the term? You heard, yes. Or in Germanic tradition, gnosiology. That is science of knowledge. What is knowledge? And the epistemological principle was established in the teaching of Atma in the Upanishads. On the highest level of knowledge, try to remember it. On the highest level of knowledge, knowledge is equal to that which it knows. It is the end of classical ancient Greek and later European epistemology. Because that our epistemology in which I was brought is that there is one thing by knowing it and the other thing was it. Yes? Can you imagine now a kind of sane and healthy lawyer who would agree with that after Princeton School of Lawyers? So the great lawyer, yes, or not corrupt in any way, no, honest lawyer, yes. Try to imagine, an honest corporate lawyer, yes. Yes, there are some, for there are a few and far between, yes, I agree, yes. But still, there are, I know one, I suppose. And by the way, I tried, he was one of the first persons I tried that epistemological trick of the Upanishads on. That is, can you imagine that for a modern lawyer, well-educated lawyer, not ignorant lawyer, but a lot of ignorant lawyers, who will agree that his knowledge of law and law are the same thing? Can you imagine? He would say, what is a sheer madness? One thing is my knowledge of the law, yes, and a completely different thing for itself. Because he may even say, well, my knowledge of law is here, in my head, and the law is in the Grinnell Burning Library, yes, this volume, that volume, yes. And it's the difference. Division between the object of knowledge and knowledge never existed in ancient Indian philosophy, and the principle was at the highest level of knowledge of Atman, the knowledge of Atman equals Atman. Yes?
So,
yes.
The rejection of the idea of objective reality.
Yes, but you know what, Zik? Can you make one step further? Quite a few of them, of course. They were, in their views, strongly influenced by ancient Indian philosophy, which at that time was in vogue, was fashionable, yes. It was, remember, in the 60s, the famous American, particularly, the worst type of American kid is California. you know approximately where California is, yes? Now, they were very proud of, as it were, of their knowledge of Indian philosophy. And by the way, some of them, they really know a bit, quite a bit of Indian philosophy, and particularly of the Buddhist philosophy. We do somewhat really agree with the first Upanishadic principle of knowledge. Well, we have to what? To detach ourselves from some very important trends in our psychology and in our education. Now, the second principle concerning the knowledge. That knowledge, that knowledge of Atman includes, sort of deep understanding that in our knowledge, Atman as an object of knowledge, by the way, it ceases to be an object and becomes what? Me. Yes. Only on the highest level. But on the level of normal people, still, I'm sitting and reading the text, sorry, not reading, but what is reading. So the text by Guru, and he's more experienced. He does. But, you know, that second principle, is to embrace the knowledge, the second epistemological principle, that is epistemological, that is that which is concerning the knowledge. Yes. Epistemological. By the way, never confuse epistemology either with logic or with logic or with philosophy in total speaking. So there are philosophical teachings where epistemology comes first in Europe. The theory of knowledge is particularly important. In German tradition, in Kant, in Hegel, in Marx, in the whole German tradition. Continue with knowledge. And the second aspect, epistemological part. The knowledge of Atman is achieved but also by passing through in principle all, practically of course not all, through a lot of concrete phenomena which we have to investigate under the angle of is this or is this not. We may say that principle, we may say it is concrete, it is concretization of and it may be concretized in very many various ways. For instance, let me quote on a little dialogue from Chandogya Upanishad. It's very important philosophical, very important philosophical. The teacher, guru, you know that guru, yes, means teacher. Who is not a teacher in general. He's not a teacher like me, he's not a teacher like teacher of mathematics, yes, or astronomy, or God forbid, sociology, yes, or anything else, because the guru is your teacher. You cannot say that your professor of mathematics here is your teacher, he's teacher in the faculty, in the Grinnell College, yes. But the real sense and import of the word guru is that when you call somebody guru, it is your teacher. Doesn't matter what subject he teaches, because he teaches you. And the teachers, they taught you, first of all, what yourself. They taught you what is yours. Now, a little dialogue, what are you doing now? Oh, you know, I think it was a teacher about the state of mind, how much wealth. So, what do you want? If you want to be wealthy, oh teacher, I know how bad it is. And the teacher, not at all bad, but now try to think on wealth, think upon wealth as if it were what? Isn't it an interesting
Yes.
And if you were to start thinking of all things you want to have, then sooner or later you will achieve the highest knowledge of. Why is that so? Because I have already told you the first factor is what? Wish, desire. So, if not, start wishing to have a lot of money, yes. Yes, yes, and then what change the object of wishing? With the same energy of desire, yes. Wasn't it tricky? And then we have that please.
What is the difference between this idea of
No.
Okay, where desire, but you want to get rid of desire, where desire is suffering.
Yes, I Buddhist philosophy will come to this. There is a stage where desire is also necessary, and well, the desire will become only started learning Buddhism. And when the desire, but already not simply your simple desire, but when you are surely aware of it, that is already transformed the desire, becomes the mighty instrument of achieving. And we have to be patient. Yes. We've only started only 2 weeks of Buddhist philosophy. It is not a sir. Now, so the teacher said it is an special art. It is a special kind to change any object of desire into any object of desire into. So please do continue desiring for money. But thinking incessantly of money as at one other time he asked the same pupil, well, what are you thinking about now? He said, you know, I'm thinking about one girl teacher. So beautiful, she's divinely beautiful. More than that, she's even clever. Cleverer than I, he said. Isn't it fun? Yes. Yes. By the way, there are a lot of their conversations about women and girls. Don't forget that all of them, they were young people. The guru was sorry, old ascetic, but they were active young people. And he said that you loved it. Yes. Oh, I love her more than explained it. He said that quick. Make an effort and convert that girl into Atman. And make it the central object of your efforts to know. And then we have this is the whole series of Atmanic sentences in the Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, sentences like, say, don't love your wife for her sake. Don't love your wife for your sake. Love your wife for the sake of your knowledge of Atman. Yes. And more than this, don't make war against your enemies without thinking of Atman. And change your desire of victory. Yes. Here we have a kind of appearance of one of the varieties of yoga, ladies and gentlemen. You know the word. All of you, yes. Because you were born in the culture where yoga is a kind of a currency. Now, of course, it is a yogic action to change your object of desire into another. because it takes some change.
Three minutes for my smoking, don't you smoke?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the main formula summing up the whole teaching and the whole knowledge of Atman in the Upanishads is very short. It is in Sanskrit, but it's almost as in English, yes, because it's the same family of languages, you know. So-called Indo-European family of languages. So, tattvamasi, tattvamasi. Literally, that art thou. Because it formula, it reflects the teacher addressing the pupil. That art, you know what art is, yes? In old English, in good old English. Instead of that is you, that art thou, yes. And which means that you are that. In the sense that you are not Professor Pytigorsky, you are not Justin. Yes. You are not student, you are not president of the college, God forbid. But you are that. You are not American, you are not German, you are not Jewish, you are that. In your essence, yes. So, from this follows two additional principles in the teaching and in the knowledge of Atman in the Upanishads. The first is exclusive principle, or principle of exclusion. That is, when in the focus of your knowledge is that which is not Atman. Oh no, this is not Atman. And the second principle is principle of inclusion. That whatever you think as of Atman, yes, is or becomes or is changed into. You remember my last example, yes? Try to think of love, any love, as love of Atman. Try to think of any object of desire. So it is a principle of inclusion. Of course, in our practical earthly life, first of all, the principle of exclusion works. Yes, oh no, what are you talking about? It is not Atman. What are you speaking? About war, it is not Atman. About peace, it is not Atman. About justice, non-existing thing, you know that. Yes. It is not Atman, but such is principle of exclusion. But then starts working the principle of inclusion. What you are thinking about war, about peace, about justice, about to think about that as, and then everything, not only you, but everything is Atman. Yes. It's interesting. And in this sense, the sort of one other idea was developed. The idea of the whole world as that, as Atman. The idea of absolute inclusion of all the things of the universe in the sphere and under the rubric of Atman. You got the meaning of these two principles. Principle of exclusion, it is, no, this is not Atman, that is not Atman. And principle of inclusion. That in the final analysis, then everything, everything about which you think I'm always use you or thou instead of I. For that very reason, because the knowledge is the knowledge which, well, which is said or spoken or uttered or recited by the guru when he addresses his pupil. Yes, that's okay, yes. Now, let's pass to the last and very curious moment of our lesson today. Is there or can be there such a thing as religion of Atman? In terms of inclusion and exclusion, it may be understood in such a way, since I am a priest, yes, my duty, my obligation, my profession is to perform sacrifices to God Indra. We have already talked about that somewhere in the end of the Vedic period, the very action of the ritual of sacrifice became regarded as more important than what? God, to whom the sacrifice, for whose sake the sacrifice is performed. And then, what do we have now, ladies and gentlemen? A kind of new, or as some historians of religion read, a kind of perversion in religion. That is, Indra is worshipped as Atman in the way similar to which the girl you love or the wealth you love is changed in your thinking, in your knowledge, into Atman. In the same way in which, according to the principle of a universal inclusivity, yes, everything is Atman, then God Indra is also Atman. And then we see the following formulation in the Upanishad. Only the God you worship or for whom you perform sacrifices is known by you as Atman. Only such a worship is what? Real. Indra is not any longer a beautiful youth, the king of gods, the king of warriors, yes, but he is Atman. And of course it radically changed the character of religion. The character of religion and made Indian religions, which started rising much later and which were subsumed under the, well, title of Hinduism. We'll come to Hinduism a bit later. That is, all those religions on the highest level of worship and ritual, all those religions became Atmanic religions. Yes. In which the gods started losing their what? Concrete features and functions. They started becoming Atman. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, not Atmans, but Atman. Atman is almost never used in plural because it is the same in you, in him, in her, and in lizard. Yes.
And octopus.
Sorry?
And octopus.
And octopus. Yes, I love octopuses. Yes. But of course, as you may easily realize, there was a very strong protest against such an Atmanic interpretation of God. It is my beloved Indra, yes. It is due to Indra that I I born in the last war. It is due to Indra that my wife brought me 5 excellent sons. Yes, and so on, and so, and now you cannot say, well, it is due to Atman that I won in the last war. It's ridiculous. Because in this sense, nothing can be due to Atman. Because it's absolute knowledge, that the absolute knowledge ascribed to Atman excludes such primitive religious ideas. But now, let me tell you one thing more. Well, it does not mean that the old religion of the Vedas disappeared, but it changed its character. Or more than that, it became religion on several levels. And the highest level of that Vedic religion acquired its, as it were, Atmanic dimension. It isn't very difficult, or it is. If it is, ask me questions now. We have a little time. Yes, please, louder, please.
When you say that at the highest level of knowledge...
Of religion. Now,
no, I'm going back a little bit to something. So
yeah.
At the highest level of knowledge, the knower and the knowledge become the same thing?
Yes.
Do you actually mean that they become the same thing, or merely the realizing, but that at the highest stage of knowledge, the knower realizes that the knowledge and the knower are the same thing?
Yes, only because, as a good remark and a good question, because it is on the highest level of knowledge where, shall we say, the knowledge merges with its subject, but at the same time it implies, it presupposes that you, the knower, yes, the pupil, you gradually become aware. And that is why we see in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that those who know Atman are, which to us seems rather paradoxical and senseless. But now, please, don't forget, for heaven's sake, that we are starting to get acquainted with a totally different religious world outlook, and totally different from our philosophical world outlook. Now, ladies and gentlemen, now I will distribute the material. It is the material from the Brahmanas and the Upanishads. All pages are numerated by me in circles. Well, so I will be referring only to pages in my numeration. So, do ignore all other numbers of pages. Only mine, yes, in the circle, yes. The first, the second, please do ignore the Sanskrit text. It is not for you. Do read only the text of English translation. And the third, in the first reading, do ignore the small letters. It is Radha Krishna's commentaries. Because it may, as it were, detract you from the reading of the text. The text is difficult, not because it is difficult in itself, but because we are still very alien to such kind of texts, very alien to that culture, yes. Very alien to everything. And that is why that is why it is so important for me to teach you that. Because to teach you that which you already know, yes, from your school, from your parents, from your teachers, is no interest at all. So the text, you will meet with a lot of strange names. So our next lesson will be explanation of the text. And so, take them. they extend, oh God Almighty, one moment, no, no, I have to give them. No. Sorry, one moment, because I am already lost, yes. Be patient for 3 minutes, and I will let your souls, your atmans go, yes. Oh, yes. So, each pack contains 23 pages. Quick start. One, two. Of course. All of you, you have the text, yes?
Not
yet. Quick, then. Is it all or not?
No.
What? Everybody has?
No. Two
more. Three more. Oh, God Almighty. I asked for 12. You are?
We're 15.
Oh, God Almighty.
Don't worry. We'll go to the office and I'll have them copy it.
Oh, please, go to the office. I'm terribly sorry, my lady. Go to the office and make, say, 3-4 more copies, okay? May I be sure that, that. Now, my last admonition, please, attention, please. Yes, please write it down. Do start with my page 30. 30. Do start.